Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
To this inspirational hour of hope, healing, and humor. Your host on this journey, from grief to grace, is transformational coach and grief expert, Reverend Chaz Wesley. Described as midwife to the dying by spiritual leaders across the nation, Chaz and his guests take a moment to light a candle in your name, as together we take another step on the journey from grief to grace. And now, here's your host, Reverend Chaz Wesley. And in your
time of need, since her husband's death in 2008, today's guest has discovered that grief has its own timetable, its own calendar, and its own seasons. Author Elaine Mansfield now writes about each of those seasons, gives presentations about time-tested ritual, and observes meditative and spiritual practices that honor her lifelong love of philosophy, poetry, and the natural cycle of all living things. The author joins me in just a few moments to share the inspiring story of her husband, Vic, and their transformative and ongoing love beyond their time together and into her new life on the journey from grief to grace. Greetings and welcome. I am your host, Reverend Chaz Wesley. And whether you are tuning in live or via our podcast, it is always our privilege to join you as a travel companion on your grief journey. I invite you to visit our website, chazwesley.com, where you can join our Facebook and Twitter pages and engage in the dialogue. You can also find helpful insights and coping skills through your grief experience by means of our videos and blogs, and where you can meet our team of inspirational coaches. As always, we join you here each and every week to encourage you to honor each step of your own process of pursuing support, seeking clarity, and recognizing a higher consciousness of an emotional and spiritual nature. At Unity Online Radio, we call it the voice of an awakening world. My guest today, Elaine Mansfield, was a nutritionist, exercise trainer, and women's health counselor for 25 years, writing and teaching extensively about these subjects, as well as offering herself as an environmental activist. After her husband's illness and his death, her work and writing have focused on end-of-life and bereavement issues. Elaine facilitates bereavement support groups for people who have lost spouses or partners near her home in upstate New York. Her spiritual perspective and insightful wisdom reflects over 40 years as a student of Jungian psychology, of mythology, Buddhism, and meditative practice. She has a TEDx talk entitled Good Grief, What I Learned from Loss. And there she speaks to her belief that there is power in grieving both intentionally and purposefully. She is the author of Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief. It is a memoir that honors her husband's life and death, their love, and her personal and spiritual evolution through grief and healing. Elaine Mansfield, thank you for joining me on the program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
And I know that you and I have talked a lot offline, and I have to tell you, I have finished your book, and it is one of those books that I finished in one sitting. It is so beautifully written and such an inspirational story of both your husband's life, his illness, his death, and your life together. And I want to start today talking a little bit about the book, because besides the beginning chapter, which is what I would call a teaser, your book is really broken into two sections. before your husband Vic's death and after. And you write so expressively about your journey through the morose and yet heartening labyrinth of the medical system and the frequent hospitalizations that Vic experienced. And with this, I certainly found the thread that refers back to the title of your book, Leaning Into Love. Share with our listeners, if you will, a bit of your story and what you mean by leaning into love.
Well, I think that title is really about my whole relationship with Vic and really my whole relationship with the world and with life. If I keep leaning into love in broader and broader sense of that term, then I can find a way to be all right. So Vic was a student, and I was a student when we met in the 1960s. And we grew up together, moving from a world that was a little bit hippie, you'd say, and then meeting a meditation teacher, and becoming more involved with spiritual pursuits. So we had years of that kind of training, and we had then seen teachers in India and in the United States and in Europe from all sorts of traditions, Hinduism, Buddhism, people who were Greek students of Greek philosophy. So when we came to that part in our life where you get those words, you know, you have cancer, we had a lot backing us up.
Tell me a little bit about that journey through cancer, if you will, because I know it takes up a lot of the first half of the book. So share with our listeners what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, well, so back to what you said in the beginning, I started the book with just the moment right after he died. And then I went back to talk about the journey of the 2 years when he was ill. So we were both extremely active in taking good care of our own health. Very great diet, a lot of organic food, and excellent exercise. And Vic got a cancer for which it took almost 6 months to diagnose because he had no risk factors, and it was also something that no one had ever heard of. Even in the big cancer centers, they finally figured it out, but very, very rare. So that's a bad thing when you have a rare problem because they don't know how to fix you. So we were pretty much faced with that word incurable right from the beginning. But even with that, there was this great sense to live and to make life good and to thrive. And Vic was very healthy, and he handled chemo physically pretty well the first time around. And at the same time when he got ill, he was asked by the Dalai Lama to write a book about Tibetan Buddhism and physics. Vic was a physicist, and he taught physics at Colgate University. So he was asked to write this book. And so at the same time that he was going through chemotherapy, he was writing this book. And It actually ended up being published just, the Dalai Lama wrote an introduction, and it came out just 3 months before he died. So that felt like that was his last, that was his gift, you know, to the world, that he really wanted to finish, and he did.
Mm. I know that you include several excerpts from your favorite poetry and philosophers. Tell me a little bit about the significance of these in your life as well as in your life with Vic.
Well, we both love poetry, and part of what happened in the Vic's treatment was that he was put in a group. He was in a lymphoma experiment, you know. So they were trying to find out what happens if you do this kind of treatment, and what happens if you do another kind. He was in the stem cell transplant group, which means you have to be essentially in isolation. I was allowed to see him, but he was in isolation for 3 weeks, and they really break your body down and then try to put it back together again. by putting in his case, your own stem cells. So when Vic knew he was going to have to go through that, he asked all of our, his friends, many of our friends, to send their favorite poems to him. And he started collecting these poems. And I've always been a big lover of poetry also, and we'd always read poetry before that too. So we found many wonderful poems that helped us deal with the grief we were going through and the sadness we felt, and also the great joy that you can find at, at the hardest moments. There's often something that'll break through, a kind of grace that comes through, and you know you're not alone in these things. So we love Rumi, and we love, I ended my TEDx talk with a quote from Rumi, which is, the wound is the place where the light enters you. And I just find poetry a way to express our deep human soul truth in images. And it really works for me. And I always use poetry in my bereavement groups, too.
You know, I have been doing bereavement work for many years now. And when I include poetry in my groups, it's not always poetry of another, but isn't it true that we all have poetry within us? And grief is, as I often say, a poem unto itself, because to master poetry is one thing, but to give birth to it is certainly the first step. And one of the things that really struck me in your book is the way you were able to so eloquently describe not only Vic's journey through his illness, but at the same time what you were going through. And it was very poetic in how you were able to share in beautiful words what you were feeling in the moment and what you were noticing out of the moment, if that makes sense. Tell me a little bit about your history with writing, because isn't this your first book?
It is my first book, but I've been a writer for a long time, pretty much since college or even high school. I've always written, and I always kept journals, and I did publish a few things that were memoir a while back. Never mind, we don't need to go into those, but I did most of my publishing in women's health. And so, but throughout Vic's illness, as soon as I knew he was seriously ill, I went out and bought a new notebook. And in that notebook it says, I don't want to start this notebook because I don't want to deal with what I know this notebook's going to be about. But I kept journals of everything that was going on, because I didn't want to forget the details, including I didn't want to forget the parts where I was less than stellar in the way I, behaved when I got impatient, that sort of thing. But throughout this, I was studying what's called the Sonnets to Orpheus by Rilke. And he is a wonderful poet of holding both life and death together. So, for example, he might talk about when you take a bite of a peach, this beautiful, lively, succulent flavor of the peach is also the death of the peach. Mm. So in so much of our experience, life and death are just holding one another very closely, very bonded to one another. I think just like love and grief are very bonded to one another. We only like to think about the love part and the life part, but the other things are there. And Rilke really helped me find a way to keep watching for those positive little moments, one little act of kindness in the chemotherapy room, or a ray of light that came in and hit a flower, or just these very tiny things that make you feel like all is not lost when you're in those dark worlds of illness.
Mm-hmm. I also read and know that you are a lover of mythology, And interestingly enough, I am teaching a class right now about mythology, and in particular, not only Greek mythology, but grief mythology, and how everything is, as you just talked about, it is the same. Life and death meet each other. And in mythology, we often talk about above the world and under the world, right? And there is just this thin layer, thin veil. So how did mythology help you through your journey with Vic, and ultimately also through your journey with grief?
Well, I've been studying mythology with a women's class that's been meeting 25 years. So we have spent a lot of time with a lot of the big myths of the world. And there are many that deal with grief. And the one that I'm most interested now, and I'm actually going to give a workshop with another woman whose name is Jean Rafa, who writes about Jungian topics. And we're going to give a workshop on the goddess Inanna and her descent into the underworld to learn about death. And Inanna is from 2000 to 3000 BC in Mesopotamia or Sumeria, where modern Iraq is. And that's where they actually found the written tablets, some of the earliest writing. And they've got a pretty, you know, they've got a lot of the story of that myth. And she did many, many things, but one of the things she did in order to become fully realized being, in this case a goddess, is she went down into the ocean. And I love the image, going back to what you said a little bit a minute ago, she held her ear to the great below, or she opened her ear to the great below. Mm-hmm. And by that, I feel like in that image, she's opening and listening and mentally aware of that there is another world, and it's a world that we all often try to avoid, but there's great riches there. And if you don't know about the world of death or the underworld or what is called the great below in that myth, then, you know, you're not going to have as you're not going to be as strong a human being, and you're not going to have the same kind of appreciation for our life. So anyway, that's one of the myths I love. If you haven't looked at Inanna, I suggest it.
You know, it is a fascinating myth. It is a fascinating study. I am co-facilitating this particular workshop with a woman who actually was a guest not long ago on this show, Dr. Kate.
I listened.
Oh, good, good.
Excuse me, I listened to her because I said, oh, look at that, mythology.
I know. And it's a beautiful way to describe the origins of life and death. And we find the origins of grief there, in my opinion. And to be able to connect with whatever world we are talking about, because the truth is, I think we all live in both of those worlds if we would just give voice to it at some point throughout our days. And I think that myth certainly helps many of us through our grief experience. And to know that you were able to be with a group for, did you say 25 years?
Yeah, we've been studying mythology together. It's not exactly the same people who started, but some of them are.
That's amazing. That is just amazing. Well, I want to continue our discussion because in our next segment, I would like you to read an excerpt from your book that is so fascinating of how you were able to bring poetry and your understanding, actually it was Vic's understanding, as we both know, of how it calms us. And so in our next segment, I'm going to ask you to do that. Stay with us as we continue our conversation today with my guest, Elaine Mansfield, the author of the book, Leaning Into Love. We will be right back after these messages from Unity.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation.
Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Wellness expert Dr. Michelle Robin on Healthy Living.
In the game of wellness, there's some basic habits that you need to embrace in order to live a well life.
In her book, Wellness on a Shoestring, Robin shows you that complete wellness of body, mind, and spirit doesn't have to cost a fortune. Client Eddie Penrice turned his health around with Dr. Robin's 7 Habits for a Healthy Life.
I've got to say my body just embraced the change. Besides feeling better, looking better, thinking more clearly.
Many of Robin's 7 Habits for a Healthy Life are simple and free. She offers tips and shares real stories from clients like Eddie, who've incorporated the habits into their lives and seen the results.
You can make this change by being convicted that you will do it, that you don't need anyone else's assistance or help to do it.
Make this the year you get healthy. Discover a low-cost, attainable path to feeling better than ever. Order Wellness on a Shoestring today at www.shopunity.org.
At Metaphysical Ronk 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, "Why did this happen to me?" a better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, "How can I use this for good?" We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time, here on Unity Online Radio.
We're glad you've joined us on the journey from grief to grace with your host, Reverend Chaz Wesley. If you'd like to join the conversation online, go to chazwesley.com, where you can connect with us on Facebook or Twitter, or email us today at chaz@chazwesley.com. Now let us continue the journey from grief to grace.
Welcome back to the program. We have made it easy for you and your friends and followers to listen in at whatever time is most convenient to you. You can download this or any archived episode of our program as a podcast via your smartphone application on iTunes or on Stitcher. And as always, we invite our listeners to join us online via our Twitter account or our Facebook page. You can find both of those click-through icons at chazwesley.com. Today we are joined by Elaine Mansfield. She is the author of the book, Leaning Into Love. Elaine, just before break, we were talking about your love of poetry, your husband Vic's love of poetry and philosophy, and it represents so much of your book. I want you to read an excerpt because there is a portion that, as I told you in an email privately, I had already highlighted that and wanting to ask you, and you emailed me before I was able to clarify that you wanted to read it. So would you open to that and tell us a little bit about that story?
I can more or less dive in because what I'm going to actually read you is almost like a section of my book, but this was taken separately as a piece called Only Kindness Makes Sense. And it was published in a journal called The Healing Muse. So I'm going to read you that version of this. And it's this happened just about 2 weeks before Vic died. And he was in pretty rough shape, but he had a will to live. And it was mostly about doing the work that he felt the Dalai Lama wanted him to do. So he really wanted to do that. And And so he was, you know, getting to the end of his rope here, and he had a tremendous will, but sometimes you just cannot win. So here's the story. A few days before our 40th wedding anniversary, I drive my husband Vic to Strong Memorial Hospital in Rochester, New York, where he's being treated for incurable lymphoma. The long drive is familiar after 2 years. Spring green hillsides shout May vitality and hope while Vic chokes and gasps in the passenger seat next to me. He's exhausted from years of cancer treatment and months of coughing. He lives on prednisone by day and a few hours of fitful Ambien-induced sleep at night. My heart breaks for him and for myself. I'm exhausted too, and I know my husband is dying. After Vic is admitted to the hospital, his oncologist arranges for the pulmonary department, that's the people who are experts in lungs, the pulmonary department, to drain the fluid surrounding Vic's lungs. I can't imagine another procedure, but Vic's will to live remains unbroken. Although he hasn't eaten or slept for days, he longs to take a deep breath. That evening, an impatient, white-coated pulmonologist and his students surround Vic's bed. You lie on the side of the bed and lean forward on that tray table so we can work on your back, the doctor orders Vic. You stand in front of him, push your body against the table, and let him lean into you from the opposite side, he orders me. Unlike most of the doctors we met, he offers no gentle smiles of encouragement, no reassurance. I do what he says. Someone added this procedure to the end of this man's long day. He doesn't hide his unhappiness about it. His students are tense and cautious as they follow his brusque directions, sterilize Vic's back, and insert a needle. Unable to speed the suctioning process, the doctor paces around Vic's bed, his resentment simmering under the surface. Vic looks up at me with exhausted, sad eyes. I want to vaporize this doctor. Will you read the poem about kindness? Vic asks in a whisper. Now? I ask. Yes, now. Please. I think he's lost his mind, but ask one of the students to hold Vic steady for a moment. I get Vic's recently published book, Tibetan Buddhism and Modern Physics, from his briefcase, and resume my position across the tray table. Despite the strange sucking sounds, a horrifying amount of cloudy fluid dripping in the plastic containers, and my embarrassment, I read the poem by Naomi Shihab Nye that ends Vic's book. So this poem is called Kindness. So here's the poem. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. Just as I'm going to add in here, just as we think life will never stop. You ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know what kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. My voice chokes with tears. That's the end of the poem. My voice chokes with tears. The pulmonologist's jaw loosens and his hard voice softens. The students sigh and reach out toward Vic's back with tenderness. My belly relaxes and Vic takes a deep breath. Twilight dissolves the hard stainless edges of the equipment and a humming grace descends over the room.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It is beautiful.
You're welcome. It's welcome. People told us afterwards that the math doctor was forever changed.
Oh.
He was known to be a very grumpy, difficult, mean to his residents and his students, and it really changed him. Vic then gave him the book, or he told me to give him the book. You know, so.
What an amazing story. And it gives voice again that kindness, only kindness makes sense. And that's what was shared in that time and space. And it is what lasts. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed when I read that for the first time, and I've read it several times, that follows about three pages of your book. And I noticed I was laughing and crying all at the same time. When you were able to say, I can't remember your words off the top of my head, but you wanted to vaporize the doctor in that moment.
Yeah, right. I wanted to vaporize that doctor.
So, you know, the things in that poem, it says you must wake up with sorrow. You must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. And you must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows. Yeah. I know that after Vic's death, you, of course, went into your own time of sorrow. And you were able to give it voice. But tell me what that voice was like for you. What came up for you in those next months and years after his death that really created a new poetry within you, one of sorrow?
Well, I would say, too, that the sense of sorrow and the sense of loss begin the minute you get a diagnosis like that, you know, for many people. And sometimes some people try to avoid that, you know, and they want the person, we don't want to say anything that the person's going to die because that'll make them feel like we think they're going to die, and we don't want them to die. So it's not, often people don't talk about what's going on. But from the very first day, Vic and I had a pact that we would always tell each other what we were feeling and thinking. And if I was having a hard time or if he was having a hard time, it was usually him, but we would always be there to help one another and to talk about the sorrow and to deal with the fact that it was a very long saying goodbye to one another. So that was hard. You can see it catches me.
Sure.
And so after he died, so my psyche, my inner life, my dream world and all that was pretty quiet right around his death. I think such an overpowering experience. And there was so much beauty in his death. He'd had so much trouble. And then his body really quieted down to die, which I was extremely grateful for that. And he also hung on. He was supposed to die within an hour or two. He hung on for 2.5 days until our son made it there. One of our sons made it because he was having all kinds of airplane trouble, and Vic died about 45 minutes after he came. But he was able to really look at our son deeply in the eye and squeeze his hand and have that last transference of love, you know, and power, I think, that came. So after Vic died, I was like most people, I think, who've gone through a long period of caretaking or people who've had sudden death, you're just kind of walloped over the head. And the way I And it hurt so much physically. I was surprised by how much my heart ached. I said, oh, heartache, I get it. but what I did is every time I felt like I couldn't take it or it was just too painful, I went outside. And I was very lucky that he died in June, and I could keep walking outside, and the earth was bursting with enthusiasm and green and flowers. So I had an old dog at the time, and she and I would sometimes go out walking two or three times a day. So I turned to nature very strongly, and I turned to writing. I kept writing what was going on with me, and I also turned to friendship. I had good friends who, once we were clear that Dick was dying and we kind of got stuck in the hospital, we thought he'd die at home, but moving in was too hard for him, so I knew it was better to just leave him where he was. And we had this sweet little private room in the hospital, actually, and so a couple of our friends came and just said, we're going to stay until the end, so I want you to know that. And that, I realized, is the biggest gift a person can give to a friend, is to really stick with them through something like that. They didn't go home and take a nap or go get a shower. They, you know, stayed right with me in the hospital room. So then I started writing a lot, walking a lot after his death, and also just allowing myself to be sad, just really allowing sadness in. And it felt to me like a time of healing, physically and spiritually. And there was also there were a lot of dreams. I had a huge number of dreams where I was either expressing Vic and I were, you know, Vic was just in my dreams a lot, and that was a wonderful gift that I got those dreams. So why don't I toss this back to you now?
Well, I so appreciate you sharing that. One of the things that I often hear as I'm counseling the bereaved, either one-on-one or in group, is, when will I dream of them again? And what you said is perfect. It was such a gift that you were able to dream of Vic and that he entered that time and space for you. And one of the dreams that you talk about in the book is that of the Green Man. And
right.
we only have a couple of minutes left in this segment, but tell me just a little bit about what that represented.
Well, I had a dream that I was going to live in the house, and just cut me off anytime you need to.
Okay.
I had a dream that I was going to live in the house of the Green Man, and he was this big green giant with his hair was the color of bronze maple leaves. And I didn't know quite who the Green Man was, other than like a little face on a garden gate. But mythologically, he was a god of death and rebirth in pre-Christian Europe, and was really associated with the Christ image that came after Christianity was introduced to that part of the world, that northern European part of the world. But I thought for me it meant, and the dream said I was going to live in his house for a year, and I thought I was going to live a cycle of being very involved with nature. And Vic was a real nature mystic and a lover of our land, and he it felt like I was honoring him also, and there was a sense where I always felt I was with him when I was walking the trails of our land or in our woods. So I let that sense of the Green Man and a new life coming, new life was coming along with death.
My guest today is Elaine Mansfield. She is the author of the book Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief. We're going to take a break, and after these messages, Elaine will share more of her experience as she has traveled through grief and into grace. We'll be right back after these messages from Unity.
Now available, YouPray, the free prayer app from Silent Unity. For more than a century, people from all over the world and all walks of life have turned to Silent Unity. With YouPray, our confidential prayer support is easy and convenient to access. With YouPray, you can send your prayer directly to Silent Unity. YouPray also includes affirmations you can share with family and friends, plus audio meditations for your prayer time. For more about the free YouPray app and links to download, visit silentunity.org/app. That's silentunity.org/app.
Examine what it means to be sacred activists in service of compassion and justice. We may find ourselves asking, how do we become a sacred activist? Institute for Sacred Activism founder Andrew Harvey says, follow your heartbreak. His advice echoes Gandhi, who once said, whenever you are in doubt, apply the following test. Recall the face of the poorest and the weakest person whom you may have seen, and ask yourself if the step you contemplate is going to be of any use to them. Will they gain anything by it? Will it restore them to a control over their own life and destiny? So, whenever in doubt about the direction of your life, just ask yourself, what breaks my heart? Whose suffering is simply too much to bear? And then commit your life to alleviate it. Don't turn your face away from the pain and injustice that is so prevalent in our world. Courageously bear witness to it, and in prayer, dedicate your life to healing it. Gain more spiritual insight. Listen to Radical Spirituality and Sacred Activism with Adam Bucco, Mondays at 4 p.m. Central Time, here on Unity Online Radio.
For boldly embarking on the journey from grief to grace. Here is your host, Chaz Wesley.
And speaking of bringing light and lighting a candle, one of the moments of Elaine's TEDx talk was when she brought onto the stage with her a lit candle. Elaine, tell me a little bit about what that represented then and what such ritual represents for you today.
Well, I felt that in doing the TEDx talk, I was actually talking about a sacred experience, that the experience of grief and love, because we wouldn't grieve if we didn't love, that it's a sacred experience. And so I wanted to mark that. And so I wanted to bring a candle on stage, and so there was a lot of conversation about that with the TEDx organizers, and finally I was able to bring a candle that was it's actually a little LED candle, but you know, I found one that looks like a candle. I didn't want any fire on the stage. But anyway, so I started it with a lit candle, and then I extinguished the candle at the end because I wanted to mark it as a sacred ritual. I always think that just lighting a candle, like another thing that if people are so feeling like they can't handle their heartache and they're so longing for someone, sometimes just like getting a photograph, getting a little flower, putting it next to that photograph, and just quietly sitting and lighting a candle will really calm the heart and calm the agitation that can come with grief and allow us to feel the love that's right there with grief all the time.
Mm. I know that you talk about ritual a lot, obviously, because you do bereavement groups. Mm. Tell me another ritual that really makes sense for you or some of the bereaved that you have talked about. One of the things I know that you talked about in your book, because... And by the way, I have to say, the way you explain the farm that you live on in upstate New York is just beautiful. You own, what is it, 71 acres or so?
Yeah, 71 acres, yeah.
And
it is beautiful.
Yeah, it just sounds like it. I want to be there. And one of the things that you and your sons were able to do was to scatter the ashes of Vic's body onto that land and build a shrine, if you will, a memorial. Talk to me a little bit about that and other ritual that really makes sense.
Many people have a lot of ideas about what should happen after they die, and Vic didn't have any, hardly any. He had two things. He said, don't let them make me sound like an angel at my memorial service. He said, I want to make it sound like I was an angel. And secondly, would you please put my ashes near, I know exactly which tree, because I know all those trees out there, you know, mm-hmm. Under the red oak tree on the knoll. So I thought we'd scatter his ashes there, but my son started dragging. The day after their dad's death, they started dragging these huge boulders out of our creek bed up to that site. And then about 2 months after Vic died, my sons and I have two sons, and we had a little ritual where we put his ashes in the earth. And then we took all these stones and we built what's, you know, called a cairn, or just, you know, kind of, it's just a stone sculpture. It's very pretty and very stable. It's stayed there since 2008, and it's been a place where I can go walk out there and take flowers. And Vic really wanted to be there, and you know, so I said, well, when I leave this land, it'll be a little sad. But my son said, well, we could dig out that place. I said, no. He wanted to be there, and this is really. You know, he was part of this land. We bought this land in 1972. So he took, this was his place. And so I feel really comfortable about where he is. But while I am here, I'm happy to be able to take, all summer I grow flowers and I take them out there all summer long. Mm. You know? So that's a beautiful ritual for me. It's very soothing.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we like to do on this show is certainly talk about the grace aspect of the grief experience. Will you share with us a little bit about what your belief or your understanding of grace is and how it really was your companion through your grief experience?
Sometimes I look back at that first year especially, or even the first 2 years, and I almost miss the mental quiet. I don't miss the level of sadness that my heart sometimes felt. But there was a deep peace there. And the way I think of grace, it's those moments in my life, and they might come up as a short, something very short, they might last longer, but where I get a little glimpse into my higher self or my soul. And so what is that like? Well, for me, it's a kind of surrender to what is. So it could happen, like it would happen during Nick's death. This sense of grace descended on the room. It wasn't exactly a happy situation, and yet there was so much grace there because there was a surrender now, no more fighting, surrender to what was, and as the little ego-chattering mind got quiet. And to me, when those moments when the ego quiets down and something broader, and the ego sort of is put to the side a bit, and you end up with this sense of a broader perspective and a very heart-opening place. And for me, this is available available at Vic's death. It was available when we read that poem, Kindness, in the hospital. It was available very many times, and since I find it often in sunsets or, you know, when I see first bluebirds in the spring around here, or, you know, these old moments of kindness that people show us, I find that if I just pause a minute, there's a sort of stillness available. And to me, that's how grace comes in.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being my guest today. You have just been exquisite and such fun, and I recommend your book so highly to others. I think, by the way, I've sold about 4 copies just today. Because I've been telling friends and clients and some hospice professionals that I work with on a daily basis about your book. And it really is a testament not only to Vic's life, but to the life of your own grief and to so many that are on the journey. So thank you for writing it. Tell us a little bit about where we can find your work. And I know that you also blog a little bit. So tell listeners where we can find you.
I blog every week. I usually write about some aspect of grief or some aspect of love. I find that my readers really enjoy my love stories.
Yes.
So, you know, so it's at, under my name, ElaineMansfield.com. And if you go to that website, you'll see a link to various things, including the blog.
And I'm sure that you have, yes, you have a link to the book. You have a link to some of the events that you'll have there in New York and the surrounding areas. And I hope that you will be able to travel all over the country and share this story.
Yeah. Right now I'm doing a lot of local hospice work because I really began, about a year after Hick died, volunteering at hospice. And that has become a really strong home for me, and I know you do that work too.
Yes, there's nothing better. Elaine, thank you so much for being my guest. I hope you will come back on the show.
Thank you. I hope I will too. I enjoyed it.
And I'm delighted that you, our listeners, chose to join us for today's broadcast. I invite you to continue the journey with us on Facebook or Twitter. You can find those click-through icons at chazwesley.com. It is a moving and recurring chant throughout Elaine's memoir that many in Unity and New Thought circles resonate with. It is the mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. It's a Buddhist refrain which means hail to the jewel in the lotus of the heart. And according to Tibetan culture, it is believed that all the teachings of the Buddha are contained in these 6 syllables, each one representing a certain Sanskrit meaning, which oppose certain internal forces that cause suffering and simultaneously gather a certain emptiness. This knowing of emptiness is not what many may understand in the traditional sense, where we imagine an experience of nothing. Rather, it is experiencing ourselves in the now moment, free and unattached of ego and individuality. It's an enlightened awareness where we become free, or empty, if you will, of everything but an inner awareness, an awakening to the truth of the nature of suffering and how to remove that which causes it, an intuitive nature within our consciousness where we establish and achieve a degree or even a perfection of generosity, ethics, patience, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. It is my belief that this enlightened awareness offers unto us the wherewithal to live, breathe, and have our being in a state of grace. To honor the journey which Elaine, her husband Vic, and their loved ones respectfully and courageously traveled, both individually as well as collectively, we dedicate and close our program with a version of the chant by the artist Deval Pramal on her album, appropriately titled, Love is Space. And we dedicate it to the memory of Vic, to the master teachers who guided him, his friends, and family through their time of suffering, and ultimately into the greater awareness that only kindness makes sense and only love remains. We offer it in gratitude to Elaine Mansfield for reminding us that we can indeed and always lean into love. Until next time, we light a candle in your name and affirm each step of your journey is filled with love, light, and peace.
Thank you for joining us on today's journey from grief to grace with Reverend Chas Wesley. Join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central as we explore new horizons of loss and life through engaging interviews and inspirational music from the most transformational voices of our awakening world. Until next time, we affirm that you are blessed beyond appearances, and it is our honor to light a candle in your name.
And in your time.
Experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, living the love, walking the talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.